From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome into this edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm and Brian Rippey with you this morning. Neil McCready out of town for a couple days, and pretty fitting he's going to pick those to be when Ole Miss is coming off a regional championship. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about Mike Bianco having a big weekend. We'll talk about super regionals. We'll take a look at Arizona and more. Really baseball-centric show today on the Oxford Exxon Podcast, the Oxford Exxon Highway 6 West in Oxford. Stop in. Get a lunch special, $5.69, two sides bread, 32-ounce drink. You also can download the SpeedPass Plus app. Download it, use it. You earn points and save money there with the Oxford Exxon. And I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio, 662-257-1900, Clark Ford in Amory, Mississippi, Highway 25 South. Corey wants to be your truck guy, wants to be your car guy. He will take care of you. And when you purchase a vehicle for him, right there toward the end, mention the podcast and get a little extra discount. Corey will help you out even a little more than he already has to get in that new Ford there at Clark Ford in Amory. Brian joining me on the Raptors Music and Food Hotline, Raptors on the Square in Oxford, Raptors on the Water as well. Plenty of locations to enjoy Raptors, the food, the drinks, the camaraderie, super regionals this weekend. If you're not going to be in Tucson, most people won't, so take advantage of the deals and the food they have there at Raptors for that, and then the College World Series potentially in a couple weeks as well. So that is Raptors again on the Square in Oxford. Brian, good morning. It a day that, you know, it's really funny. And I know you and Colin have a podcast up, Ruby Writes. It's up on the side. It's up here in this MPW digital feed. But I sensed excitement. I sensed a lot of exhaling, because if my phone is any indication, if the message board is any indication, if just this fan base is any indication, it was really funny. They woke up yesterday morning scared to freaking death. The loosest people associated with Ole Miss were actually the players. The Rebels get scoring four runs in the first inning. I thought they really showed up in the moment. I mean, there was no residual effect of Ole Miss whatsoever on Monday afternoon.
Yeah, I think that whole narrative, and I always have to preface it, just people like, you know, when you use the word narrative now, it assumes that it means something's false. Like, narrative can absolutely mean something that's true. I think that narrative about being tight and all of that was really more fan base and Mike Bianco driven, and it was justifiable as well. But I just never really bought into the idea that, you know, a bunch of kids, most of them, a lot of them, I guess, not from Mississippi. I mean, the same kids that were down 9-1 to LSU came back and won a pretty important game. You know, didn't win the game against Arkansas, but came back and tied it. You know, beat Jack Leiter, Kumar Rocker, not literally, but won 2 out of 3 after losing Gunnar Hoagland. Like, all those kids that had kind of checked all those boxes along the way, I just never subscribed to the fact that they would play tight and the moment would kind of engulf them. If they were, it was probably having something to do with their head coach in the dugout, because otherwise it just never seemed to add up with anything they had done so far this year.
Yeah, you know, we're going to bounce around. I'm going to do a big picture, small picture, probably weaving. I don't necessarily have an outline for this podcast because I never do, but Ole Miss wins 12-9. They fight off the loss from Sunday night and really had to fight through a weird Monday. You've got the delays. The game was supposed to start at 6. They move it to 12. I'm assuming for rain and TV purposes, once Arkansas had lost and they had to kind of stagger programming throughout the day. Then it gets delayed to 12:30, then 1. Then, hey, we're going to do another update at 2. At that point, you're going, God, is it going to be a night game again? But no, the rain got out. They were able to start at 2:30. They had one brief lightning delay. This is what I kind of mean about I'm just kind of circuitous around all the storylines. Ole Miss, I thought, and I know we didn't get a ton of outs after this, really benefited from how quickly that lightning delay was, where they could get Jack Doherty back on the field, could let him get some outs. I mean, we didn't talk to him yesterday, so I wasn't able to build a story around Jack Doherty. But I went to bed the night before thinking Cody Adcock was going to get the start. Cody, he was really good against Arkansas and Hoover, but he got popped pretty good in relief yesterday. Jack Doherty, a kid who was going to redshirt for half the season, who started one midweek game, basically just to get him innings. It wasn't about starting. He starts the biggest game of the season for Ole Miss and does a hell of a job. I mean, just from a mentality standpoint, his confidence level, how he's handled himself. I think Ben asked it of Mike in the press conference, is that he's been a chameleon of this pitching staff where he can kind of do whatever. He can do some long relief. He can do some short relief. He starts it here in the regional final. I mean, Jack Doherty last night or yesterday, 4 innings pitched, 3 hits, 2 runs, 4 strikeouts, 1 walk on a couple days rest and on a day when there were 11 combined home runs. It's pretty damn remarkable. It's pretty fascinating. I mean, I don't know that just because of Zoom and the situations we have as media members that we've really given full credit to just the emergence of him and what he's done for this bullpen as they move forward and try to get to Omaha.
It was massive. I mean, you think about yesterday and the whole plan after kind of everything went to hell is from a pitching standpoint on Sunday night, having to use Myers, your game four guy. It was just kind of like, what is the path to getting 27 outs here while preserving a lead? And you got 10 from your two most trusted guys on the back end, and that was probably every bit of what you were going to get from him, given what Doug looked like. And, I mean, how Taylor Broadway might could have gone 12 himself. But, you know, from a length perspective and a 2 days rest. And then if you don't get 12 from Doherty, I mean, hell, how big of an adventure were those 9 outs in between Doherty and then Nikhazy in Broadway? That felt like a game and a half within itself. And so how different is that game if he gets 9 outs or 8 or can't come back after the lightning delay? It's a much different game, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, because I don't even really know where they go. I mean, that's the thing. I thought Mike exhausted every option of what was a good matchup for Ole Miss against Southern Miss. Because, look, Southern Miss is a fastball-hunting team. They hammer fastballs that don't have just max velocity. They're a really good offense. I mean, they're one of the best offenses, frankly, Ole Miss has seen this season. And, you know, he throws Adcock out there, who's got a big fastball, but they hit him hard. I mean, that was he faced 4 batters. He gave up 3 runs. I mean, it was pretty ugly, including 2 home runs. Kimbrell kind of gave them a little bit. He sort of paced it, even though they scored a couple runs. I thought that just him on no day's rest really affected him. I thought if it's yesterday's Kimbrell, he gets a few more outs. But my point being, yeah, I don't know, because I don't think Wes Burton would have been a very good matchup for this team. He's fastball heavy at 92 miles an hour. They just didn't have another bullpen gun. I mean, had you told me on Friday, hey, they're playing on Monday, and by the way, Diamond and Nikhazy are going to pitch, it would have been blowing my mind at that point. So, no, Doherty made it happen. The way Mike managed the staff, frankly, I mean, if you get past, hey, should he or shouldn't he with Doug or anything else, and we can dive into that a little bit. But I thought Mike did one hell of a job yesterday of simply, if you're looking at it in a vacuum, of finding 27 outs. Because, look, here's what he also did. You know, Doug didn't have a lot. I mean, Doug got 4 outs on basically guts. I think he probably scared the freshman from Southern Miss crapless there in the sixth. I mean, it's the biggest out of the game. Because at that point, Ole Miss is up 5 runs. But the bases are loaded for Southern Miss. There's 2 outs. And a hit there, and that thing gets a little weird because you at least bring the tying run to the plate. You at least get Southern Miss in a position to go, okay, we can make this comeback now. Nikhazy strikes him out on 3 straight pitches as soon as he comes into the game. Just really overwhelmed him with kind of guts and confidence, I thought. I thought he intimidated the kid at the plate for that at bat. But the next inning, he comes out, and there's not much there. I mean, Doug gets through the inning, gives up a couple runs, but there was a couple of fastballs around 85, 86. He did find some adrenaline to get up to 90 there toward the end of the inning. But, you know, Doug was just kind of whatever was left in him. Credit to him. He sent Mike Bianco a text the night before and said, basically, I'll do whatever you want to. Just, you know, pitch me. But my point being, Mike showed patience. Taylor had thrown 2 days before that. It wouldn't have been crazy to go ahead and hand Taylor the ball at the start of the seventh inning and say, hey, get 9 outs, get 12 outs, get 10 outs. Let's just put you in now and see what happens. If we're looking at it strictly in a vacuum, I thought it was interesting, and I thought it was Mike trying to really be smart with maxing out what Taylor could give him, holding him until the eighth inning and trying to find a way through 21 outs before he goes to his closer.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that. And it's interesting that out in the six was absolutely the biggest out of the game, because you talk about if he gives up a hit there, things do get kind of weird. Well, half the hits in that game, there were 22 hits and 11 home runs. So you're talking about the fact that it's a hit. There's a pretty good likelihood that bad boy's going over the fence with the way – I mean, the Kimbrell home run, you mentioned he gave him a little bit. That home run to left field was kind of the one where you're like, okay, this park is really playing like a trampoline today, right? I mean, I thought Graham probably had that the whole way, and then all of a sudden the Southern Miss guys in the bullpen are going nuts, and it's like, okay, that got over the fence. So, yeah, Doug didn't have a lot, and I don't know. I guess we can get into a minute as whether that's the smart decision or not. But in a year where Mike's made a couple of decisions that have, you know, made the fan base melt and directly cost them a couple games, he deserves credit for the Doherty decision and how he managed the pitching staff after that. Because, you know, I texted you last night or two nights ago, whenever it was, trying to, just while we were recording, seeing if he had announced a starter. And you said, he said he doesn't know, but you think Adcock. And we'd kind of kicked the idea around for a little bit. And it was, we got to that. We got to maybe Kimbrel, just because of the left-hander in that lineup, see what you can get out of him. Maybe Diamond on short rest. Doherty, while we kind of allotted an inning for him somewhere, for whatever reason, it just never crossed either one of our minds to start him. And I thought that was a very inventive way to use him, and probably the perfect way to ease in the game, right? Because on a day Southern hit 6 home runs, well, Diamond leads the team in home runs allowed, and Doherty's only allowed 2 on the year. And so on a day that ballpark played the way it did, it was the perfect way to ease into that game. And then, yeah, I think you're dead on about Broadway as well. Could he have gotten 9 outs? Probably, but Mike showed trepidation all year to kind of extend him beyond that. Oddly enough, outside the first game of the season, in which he got like 12 or whatever it was against TCU. So, yeah, I think he deserves credit, because if you're going to crush him when he makes bad decisions, and he's made 2 pretty egregious ones this season, he managed that incredibly well yesterday when the heat was on. I mean, when there was opportunity for him to mess that up, he didn't do it.
In what's going to be an offensive game, you know it's going to be an offensive game. Both teams are pretty devoid of pitching at that point. Getting off to a start, it's such a momentum game. Game 7s and regionals are momentum games. And by starting Doherty, he was able to kind of calm things down, let his offense get to work a little bit. You know, on a day when I don't know how I've seen the ball fly to Swayze more at any point. I mean, it was just jumping yesterday. Everything was hit hard. You know, anything in the air was getting out of that park. Doherty was perfect. And yeah, that was inventive. That was creative. That was something different than you would have expected from Mike Bianco, frankly. So I think that was the decision of the game. I thought that there's certain things managing, but as far as just, hey, what won the game yesterday, it was Mike's decision to start Jack Doherty. He starts anybody else, and I'm not sure that we're having the same conversation right now. If we're being completely honest, I don't know how they would have navigated that without Doherty getting those first 12 outs. And then, you know, you mentioned Broadway at the end, and I wrote about this. It's up at rebelgrove.com. People can read it. Taylor Broadway down the stretch has been better than any closer in my era, especially the Mike Bianco era for the most part, given that Ole Miss had to win a lot of games to get to that host spot, what they were able to do. And Hoover didn't matter, but I do think it gave this team some confidence. I think that the Hoover run, maybe from a mentality standpoint more than a resume standpoint, was important for Ole Miss. But since that loss to Texas A&M, so really down the stretch here, the rest of the season for Taylor Broadway, he picks up 3 saves in the regional. He now has 16 saves on the season. That's a school record that he's extending. He knocked off Brett Huber's record, I guess, a week or so ago. But the last 9 appearances, Taylor Broadway has thrown 15 innings. He's allowed 1 run. He struck out 21 with 2 walks. He has 7 saves, and Ole Miss is 9-0 in those 9 games.
That'll play. I mean, I think the last run he's allowed was May 16th against Vanderbilt. That was quite a long time ago. And yeah, you're right. I mean, he's been as good as anyone in the country down the stretch. And it kind of gets lost in all the other heroics, right? With the Elko thing and Doug kind of turning into a legend himself. Broadway's been as good as anyone, and this team has absolutely needed him. And I thought the run in Hoover was important from the standpoint as well. Is you look where Ole Miss ended up in the seeding. Arizona's a pretty manageable matchup. Did you really want to go to Nashville or Knoxville or go to Austin, Texas as well? Like that's a whole different story in terms of your chances of winning 2 games to advance. But yeah, Broadway's been tremendous. And that's one of the things I was going to ask you was, where does that rank among closers in your time around here? Because, you know, I mean, you've seen it and had conscious memory of it longer than I have as well. Like I don't know necessarily where it stacks up, but it's got to be up against the best, because I mean, hell, he's gone almost 16-ish innings without – I mean, I think he's allowed 1 run in his last 16 innings or something. That's remarkable.
Yeah, he's got he's a – and it's no offense to him, because I'm bringing him up in the same conversation, so this is actually a compliment. he's a better Jake Morgan. Throws a lot of strikes, throws, you know, throws the breaking ball in the strike zone, can get swing and miss off of it. But that fastball, I wrote about it. I linked it in my story I wrote last night, and I wrote about it in the season opener, frankly. It's kind of funny how this has come full circle. When Ole Miss beat TCU, Broadway goes, what, 4.1, 5 innings, had a really long outing in the season opener against TCU that the Rebels won. And he was accumulation of last season when I think he allowed one run in maybe like 18 innings or something in 2020 before the pandemic closed the year. And they had used a ton of analytics and technology to figure out what he was doing wrong. They did some tunneling things. They figured out what pitches kind of work together. It's out of Wake Forest. There's a pitching lab thing now that really breaks down how to maximize what you do, what you can do better. And Broadway fully embraced all that. They found multiple things that he needed to be doing that could help him out. And it's completely turned around his career. I mean, it's made him a formidable force here in the back end. It's as good as anything non-Scott Biddle at his absolute peak addition. And frankly, when you look at straight stats, it's the same as that. I mean, it's hard to get better than one run over the course of 15 innings and 9 outings in crunch time, too. We're not talking about midweek games. Every single one of those Broadway appearances are either in Hoover, in SEC weekends, or in a regional. He's like I said, he gets all three saves. I mean, because, you know, you look back at Friday, I know it was SEMO. I know they lose 21-0 to Southern Miss, and it kind of gets overshadowed. But Dylan Dodd was not bad at all. I mean, he was kind of the real deal on Friday. I mean, that was a game where Broadway had to be good. I mean, you know, one ball out of the ballpark, and that game gets a little funny. So that's what's interesting, too, is we kind of wrap up the minutiae a little bit of the weekend. But, you know, you look back, SEMO, Ole Miss did what they had to do. They preserved pitching well. I thought Nyman did a decent enough job in that one. And then yesterday overshadows what an effort Doug Nikhazy gave them on Saturday against Florida State. I mean, he just guts through 7 innings. He doesn't have a curveball early in the game. I mean, there's really nothing more to be said. It's kind of like Tim Elko and the whole legend thing and the home run. I don't know what's left to say about Doug Nikhazy. When Ole Miss won that game last night, in my head, I was most happy for Doug that he got to pitch again, that he gets to pitch in a super regional, that his season's not over, that he was able to walk off the Swayze mound again after a strikeout and they didn't pull him after the two-run homer, the home run, and let that be how his home career ends. Because Ole Miss has found a way to get this thing done, basically on Nikhazy and Broadway. And in Nikhazy, the force that he's been in big moments, in big games. I mean, in the two regionals that he's pitched in, taking out even yesterday's relief effort, we're talking 7 innings in both of them, one run against Clemson, this effort against Florida State when he was just finding ways to get 21 outs over the course of it. We had this conversation last time you and I did a podcast, and it was, you know, where does he rank? Where would you put him? You absolutely give him the ball first, if not for Drew Pomeranz, one of those, and I'll take either one of them if I have to win one game. But I was thinking about Doug earlier yesterday. I was walking through the stadium, I guess before one of the delays, and I didn't know – I guess I knew he was there because you had seen him, but I ran into Christian Trent. He was coming down out of the bleachers. He walked by, and he actually recognized me first, and we were talking. We probably spent 10-15 minutes together, just whatever. But my mind while I was talking to Christian was going back to that 2014 Super Regional, to Omaha when he beat Texas Tech. And I said, you know, it's kind of like the Jake Morgan thing with Broadway. Nikhazy is Christian Trent mentally, but he's got more shit. You know, he's got more stuff. I mean, Nikhazy is more talented than Christian. Christian would tell you that. But both of them, from a swing pitcher standpoint of when either, hey, we've got to stay alive or we can step on a throat right here, they elevate their team. And that's what Doug did so much too. I thought even – and this could be some hindsight. This could be some hyperbole. I thought even when he came into the game yesterday, Ole Miss got a little crisper defensively. I thought they bounced around a little more. I thought he gave Ole Miss, and frankly the stadium, as soon as the Rooster plays and the whole deal, I thought there was just an extra shot of adrenaline that kind of went through the Ole Miss fan base, team, everything as he came in the game there in the sixth inning.
It happens every time he pitches. They look different when he's on the mound, and it's not a bad thing in terms of him looking different when he's off, but I think shot of adrenaline is probably the best way to articulate it, because I don't really know how else to say it. Like, it's just, they look different. They have a little bit more of a hop in their step when they're on the mound, and how could you not? I mean, how could you be any more confident in the field with than having 26 on the mound for you. And yeah, I am glad that his career didn't end, you know, in a different way, that he gets to pitch one more time. And yeah, you take him in a one game scenario against just about anyone else, like you mentioned, Pomerantz as well. And I, you know, yesterday to me was, yeah, he gives up the two solo shots, but the fact that he's able to come out on one day's rest and get you four crucial outs, including the most crucial out of the game, almost adds to the legend of it to me. Yeah, I really don't know what else you can say about him. The comparison to Trent, too, I think is an interesting one because, you know, that kind of infamous rumor story, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's true, where after they lose the game one in Lafayette in 14 or whatever, no one's really talking, and he walks, like, Trent's walking back to the bus, patting his shoulder or whatever, and someone's like, hey, what are you doing? He's like, season's right here, boys. I got this shit. Like, it's not an aloofness, but it's like it's totally being unfazed by any sort of moment. He and Doug kind of have that quality, and you can tell talking to them when they're not in the moment as well. They don't seem to really get bothered by a whole lot, and they always seem to be completely in control and, like, aware of what's going on around them, and there seems to be an absolute purpose to everything. I don't really know – I don't think aloof is the right word, but just, like, don't get caught up in the moment at all. I asked Sykes Orvis to describe it one time, and he used a bunch of words to describe Trent that I probably couldn't use on here, but, like, it's just something about having it, and it's hard – it's hard to kind of tangibly quantify.
Sykes went with the proclivities version of what was going on. There was a few things there.
If you ever get a chance to say, describe Christian Trent, and he'll go after it.
Okay. Yeah, I got to think about this, and it sounds crazy. And it's kind of what I wanted to write about last night. And Mike gave me a couple of really good quotes about it. Tim Elko gave me a couple of really good quotes about it. Because, I mean, Tim, I don't know. I don't even really have any words. Two grand slams, two homers yesterday. A force in the middle of a lineup with one ACL when, let's be honest, I know he won't admit it, he's hurting. He's not even moving around as well as he was moving around 2 weeks ago. But he's going to play. And from an analytics standpoint, he hits well enough to be a statue on the bases. It is what it is. But he personifies what I'm talking about here. Gunnar Hoglund's out for the season. I mean, this regional would have been much easier had Gunnar been available. I mean, duh, analysis. Max Chofi had a hell of a 2020. He would have helped this team. You know, Max gets a knee injury. He ends up with Tommy John. He's out for a while. All jokes aside, from a defensive standpoint, from a being in the right place standpoint, Kel Baker has helped this team. He was out in two different ways. Over the course of the season, Peyton Chatney had a hamstring injury the opening weekend. He was out for a little while. The injuries have mounted up. We've dealt with all the COVID stuff, the testing, the protocols, probably some anxiety from players on, hey, if I'm positive, I'm out 2 weeks. What does that look like? You can make the argument with all the stuff swirling around right now, Ole Miss now in its second straight Super Regional. We'll see what they do at Arizona. You can make the argument this is Mike Bianco's best coaching job. They're 44-20. They won 18 regular season SEC games. They found a way through a regional that Florida State was a very average team. They were good, but this was not a great Florida State team. But Southern Miss was a pissant of a two. They're a good team. They're a good program. They hit, which is one of the things you don't want to see the two seed. And the two seed, you want to see arms because you can kind of out-hit them as the regional moves through. But Southern Miss could easily have hit their way through multiple regionals. Handling people, we talked about it last time. Decisions, I get it. Mike was not perfect in that all year, but from a handling people standpoint, from an understanding people, which is something Mike in 21 years, I think probably would be a criticism, something he hasn't done overly well. I don't know that early in his career he managed different personalities different ways. He kind of had one way to do it, and he hammered it home, and that's the way he coached his team. And you know, they won a lot of games, but it's different. This generation is different, the way you coach them. From a strictly people standpoint, I think there's a very strong argument that now that they have won a regional, this is Mike Bianco's best coaching job.
I agree. I mean, it's certainly up there in the conversation, right? 15 was a really good job because that team wasn't very good. 16 was pretty good as well, but I think this trumps all that because, you know, when you go through all the injuries as well, you forget – not you, just collectively, I forgot as well going through it. Doug missed some time as well, right? Going in there. Yeah, exactly. And so keep having to manage all those pieces. And you know, it's interesting, they win 18 games and, you know, he directly probably cost them from winning 20. It's like golfer that shoots 68 and says he left a few out there. Like Mike did his best coaching job and left a couple of strokes out there. I think the managing people part is exactly dead on. I mean, there's definitely times where Mike doesn't understand people. And it's like that part, that narrative, whatever you want to call it. I mean, don't you think the last two times they've gone to a regional, that's kind of been put to bed? What the change in the 2019 team from early May all the way to kind of just running out of gas and losing to a better Arkansas team in June. I mean, those guys, if those guys were tight yesterday, it would have been because of him, don't you think? And they weren't. I mean, they were doing whatever the hell that clap thing was over their head in the second inning. Like, and that's the most important game of their season. I mean, I think Mike's definitely changed the way he kind of handles guys and the way he coaches them, like you mentioned. And like, and it's interesting. Mike's, I know it's Zoom, I know it's a little bit different, but someone was talking to someone yesterday and asking about like the, where's this team rank in terms of resiliency or whatever. I mean, Mike said at least once, and I'm pretty sure twice, that this is the most resilient group he's ever coached and that he's never been more proud of a team. And on the surface, if you're out there listening, you're probably thinking, okay, coach cliches, blah, blah, blah. You would know better than anyone. Mike doesn't really say stuff like that. He hates comparing past teams and past players and stuff. And so I think when he says stuff like that, it's very telling.
Yeah, there's two things that Mike Bianco hates. It's trying to pick his favorite teams, kind of like his favorite children in a way. And then two is, hey, can this be a springboard for in the future? He hates that question. Absolutely. Because I don't know. Ask me in 2 months.
Favorite baseball movie.
Yeah. Why? Look, and we're kind of jumping all around everywhere. But I see the times. They've come out just now. Mike has a decision to make here that I don't think is much of a decision. I think he has the whole dug. The Tucson Super Regional, Ole Miss gets very unlucky here. It's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series. They don't get a Saturday start on this thing. That's going to be weird from a what do you do? Because even Diamond threw pitches on Monday. I mean, he's fine. He'll be okay by Friday. That's not a big deal. I don't think you can – I think you still have to start Diamond in game one. I don't think Mike – trust is not really the word. It's just that he's never been in these moments like this. I don't think you can go completely backwards and start Myers in game one. I think you've got to start Diamond. And it almost kind of forces Mike into a pretty good decision, I think, because Doug needs an extra day of rest, especially after yesterday. He's just thrown way too much to try to get him ready for Friday, in my opinion. That's 3 days rest after 1 day rest. But in a way, it's almost a free shot for Ole Miss. Because if Diamond can throw and he can win that game, you get to wake up on Saturday and hand Doug the ball. Arizona doesn't have one true ace. They've got two starters that are really good. But it's not like they've got a Pomeranz or a Garrett Cole or somebody over there that's waiting for you where you got to go win a game 1-0. It's going to be an offensive weekend. Arizona leads the Power 5 in runs scored. They're second overall behind Wright State in runs scored in the country. I think Ole Miss is like top 10. That's going to be an interesting deal. They're going to start Friday at 8 o'clock Central on ESPNU, Saturday 9 o'clock Central on ESPN2, and then 9 o'clock Central for an if – I'm sorry, 8 o'clock Central for a an if-necessary game on Sunday. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Ole Miss and Arizona. And, yeah, I think that makes you have to go Diamond to KZ, Myers or McDaniel, however they decide on game three.
One, is it a decision between Myers and McDaniel at this point? I would hope it's not. I mean, can you really run McDaniel back out there like that? I mean, I guess you could, but from what Myers has given you the last two times and how long he's gone, I would say he's absolutely the third guy. I see like both sides of it, but honestly, given, I mean, that Arizona ballpark from like the little I've read about it and given their offense, I know it's like that he hasn't been on that stage enough, but if you're going with the free shot, I would almost feel better with Myers. But I agree. I think he starts Diamond. I don't think
– I guess your question is, do you want to run the risk of losing a Super Regional without Diamond pitching? And yeah. I'm not saying you do or don't. I just think that's probably the question.
Yeah, that's completely fair. Just – and I think you definitely hold Doug – I didn't think of this. So I can't take credit for it, but Colin brought this up the other night. Is there any world where I don't know if I necessarily do this, but it's something that made me think. If you win the first game, is there any world where you consider holding Doug and try to win the second game with Myers? Because if you get Doug in a game three, that's going to be better than whatever Arizona trots out. And Arizona, if I'm not mistaken, their best pitcher throws in game two from a number standpoint for the most part.
I absolutely think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I thought that's the one mistake Mike made in 2009 when Drew was coming off short rest after he had pitched on Monday against Western Kentucky, is that they won game one with Philip Irwin. They hit the walk-off. Matt Smith hit it in the 10th or 11th inning. And you had the ability to hold Drew for one more day, give him one more day of rest. And it's two things. Do you hit the game three starter better, especially with your ace on the mound where you're a little more amped up? And then two, I think Drew went seven innings. If he gets one more day of rest, does he go eight? Does he go nine? You know, what does he do with that extra day? Does he have more in the tank? So, no, I think that's absolutely right. I think game one gives tons of options if you don't pitch Doug Nikhazy and you did find a way to win. You find a way out of that game if you're Ole Miss, because you can't risk losing the series without Doug pitching. But, yeah, look, Doug's not going to be – phased or frustrated by a game three. He's not going to wake up that morning shaking by any stretch of the imagination. It puts more pressure on Arizona, even in game two, knowing that Doug's waiting over there in game three if they don't win. I think psychologically and just straight up analytically, that would absolutely be the way to go. But you've got to find a way to win, you know, to that game one win.
Sure, because it's – I mean, the entire conversation goes out the window if you lose game one. I mean, you have to throw him in game two and extend your season. But, I mean, at that point – I know it's the stage part of it, but without looking at who Arizona would throw in that game, Myers is a pretty good option. Like, you wouldn't feel horrible about rolling into him with the game three, even if you lost game one and you were able to even it with Doug. So it isn't interesting from a decision standpoint, because it would have, like you mentioned, would have become a little bit more of a decision had they gotten Saturday, Sunday, Monday. But I've also found it interesting yesterday, you know, Colin just, I love the guy to death, but he can be a little dramatic sometimes, was saying on Sunday night that Doug might try to fight Mike had he not let him try to come out there on Monday. Didn't Mike actually say that? Didn't he mention that Doug might have tried to fight him if he wouldn't let him come out there?
Yeah, that was Mike's direct quote, I believe, is he would have fought me had I not allowed him to pitch. Something along that line.
Whatever, you could take fight to mean whatever you want in that situation. I choose to take it as fist fight just for my imagination's sake. But, yeah, I mean, that kid's not going to be fazed by a game three moment. So it'll be interesting to see how Mike manages the pitching staff. Seems like one decision is kind of taken out of his hands by getting the Friday. What time's the Friday start? I've missed that first one.
So Central time's 8:09, 8:00.
That's gonna be past our bedtime, so that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking like 1:30 in the morning on Saturday for me. This could be a problem. You know, Arizona, they're 43-15. They're 8-2 in their last 10. They're the number 5 national seed. They're good. There's no doubt about that. I think they won the regular season Pac-12 title. They're very consistent. They've gone on big runs. They score a ton of runs. But they've got some head scratchers in this. I mean, they're not some invincible team where you look at their record and go, oh, my God. I mean, UCLA takes a series from them. They do have a really nice win over Oregon, although LSU wins that regional. We'll talk about that as we move on here in this thing. They, you know, they lose a Friday night 21-2 to Washington State. Stanford beats them in 2 out of 3. Stanford's a good team, but they're not unbeatable either. That was in Stanford at the farm. And then they almost lose a series to Dixie State in late May. It closes their regular season. Dixie State. 11-9 on Friday. On Thursday, they went 4-2, and on Saturday, they went 5-4. So Dixie State found a way to limit them to 9 runs in 2 games and then winning the other game 11-9. It's almost like they kind of have to hit their way out of it. And if they get in low scoring games, they kind of freak out a little bit as I look at their win loss.
Yeah. And I got this question last night from someone on the internet. Are they substantially better than Southern Miss?
They're a very similar profile.
Yes. Probably a better version, but not something that's night and day. So yeah, I think, and that's probably why some of the Hoover stuff mattered. You get an Arizona team that you feel like you got a decent shot against, rather than, you know, headed to Nashville and Knoxville, and, you know, named one of the top 3 places. So I think Ole Miss absolutely has a good opportunity to go out there and do this. And, you know, you got a pretty good chance to win one game. I mean, there's no guarantees, but Nikhazy's become as close to a guarantee as you've had in the sport. So try to go find a way to win another one. And this was, particularly given the way this Ole Miss team was constructed, this regional round was always going to be the hardest round, particularly without losing Gunner, right? Because now it's just 2 out of 3. Okay, this is what you've done every weekend. Go try to find a way to get 2, which they've done, you know, every single, I mean, they did it every weekend. I know it was only two weekends after Gunner went down. Like that to me suits this team a lot better than potentially getting in a loser's bracket and ending up in a game on Monday where you're like, how in the world is this going to end?
Well, look, they have an opportunity. There are no, you know, there's no moral victories at this point for an SEC team going on the road. I sit here and look at it, though, and how much simpler this thing would be without that Gunner Hoglund injury. Because, I mean, you know, you talk about the emergence of Myers and Doherty and whatever. You actually had bullpen arms to go with them, too. I mean, you sit there and could run out Hoglund, Nikhazy, Myers, whatever you want to do as this thing moves forward. It's gettable. It's a winnable series. Here's the problem they're going to have to do. They're going to have to do two things. They're going to have to play really, really good defensively, which Ole Miss does not always do. Arizona stresses at-bats. They don't give a lot of at-bats away. Every at-bat's kind of a fight. They run up pitch counts. They will run on you, which Dunhurst hopefully, you know, from an Ole Miss sake, can neutralize that a little bit because you can't just run crazy on him by any means. But they are one of the best teams in the country at just keeping high-pressure pitches going when they're on offense. And, you know, what it does is it just kind of by the fifth or sixth, you slip just a little bit, and then suddenly they score four runs and they put big innings together. So, look, to win two games, it's going to have to be 18 very clean innings. They're going to play very good defensively. I think you have to at least contemplate playing John Rhys Plumlee to give you a little more ability in the outfield from a defensive standpoint. I think there's a couple things you can do to mitigate some of this. But they're just going to have to not be stupid. You know, we look, he's a freshman, and I'm not picking on him, but TJ McCants has got to play smarter. He can't have a week or two where he's played like he's played these last few weeks since, you know, really since that back pick in Hoover. He's not played well. It's almost kind of like it got in his head a little bit, and he's either overly aggressive or he's tentative. He just needs to play baseball, needs to calm down a little bit. That's the way to beat Arizona. They can run you out of the yard if you're sloppy, if you give away at-bats. And Ole Miss gives away a lot of at-bats. They don't always have quality at-bats every inning. So that's the task for Ole Miss. From a pitching standpoint, I do think they have enough because, like you said, it's just one weekend. It's doable. But it's something to kind of follow as they move forward on kind of how they get this thing done if they are to get to the College World Series here in 2021. Well, take a quick break in the podcast. I'm going to tell you about Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Steele County, and Chattanooga. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting that understands your market, a leader in condo financing, the float-down option, and more. You can find Jason at 662-234-2704 or JLOWE at communitymtg.com. The podcast also brought to you by Visit Oxford. VisitOxfordMS.com is the website. Go to the events page, see what all is going on locally in Oxford this week and every week, and they will take care of you as far as whether you're coming to town or whether you live here. Got the Summer Sunset Series. Hope you enjoyed the one this week. Every single Sunday in June in the Grove, that is on Sunday evenings. So take advantage of some live music and more coming up here in Oxford. Again, visit oxfordms.com/events. Podcast also brought to you by Northeast Spark, NESPARC.com. Service people across rural communities. Two packages, the Ignite package, 100 Mbps, or the Blaze, the 1 gig that powers the Clarkport studio. Your hometown team bringing you world-class broadband. That's NESPARC.com. So find out if they're in your area, get hooked up, and have the best internet around. 662-238-3159. Podcast also brought to you by Tyson Drugs. They're in Holly Springs and G&M Pharmacy in Oxford. 662-236-2222. They deliver locally in the Oxford area. They offer MedSync for your prescriptions the same day each month and take care of you, whether it be one delivery, one trip into the pharmacy. You have what you need when you need it with G&M. So again, 662-236-2222. Did you stay up for all of Ole Miss, for LSU and Oregon last night?
I did, and I pulled like the classic dad move. I fell asleep where it was still 7-6. Then all of a sudden I wake up and it's 9-7, and Oregon's got a man on base in the ninth. So I missed like part of the drama, but I did catch the end of it after falling asleep on the couch for a second. So I was like, yeah, if I'm up, I'm going to watch the end of this thing. I don't know. I mean, you know, that's turning into one of the old Maneri storyline storybook deals. And do you think LSU also put that out there before the selection committee so they could get in the tournament? Do you think there was any strategy there? Is that too conspiracy theory?
Well, the committee went heavy RPI, so I think that they probably get it anyway. But look, you get Maneri in his last series. They've got LSU across the front of the jersey. They were getting in. Come on. Like, there's no doubt about that. They were getting in. you know, Sus brought a good point up. Alabama's probably the team that gets left out if Louisville and Pitt don't get a series canceled because of COVID. Because the winner of that series gets two more wins, Pitt or Louisville gets in, and one of those SEC teams would not have gotten in.
So you think Alabama gets in if that happens?
No, I think Alabama had not gotten into the field if Pitt and Louisville just played games.
Okay, okay. Yeah, I see what you're getting at now. I was thinking of Georgia. Georgia got left. That's where I was missing the wrong. Okay, I got you.
Yeah, I think Bama gets left out. I think LSU was in either way. I think they were fairly comfortable, you know, point of the last five, six teams in, something along that standpoint.
Yeah, and credit to them. They went through the loser's bracket, and, you know, the tough matchup with Tennessee, right? I mean, Tennessee's got some dudes. Like, that's a team you'd want no part of. But, hey, it's a 2 out of 3, and they wear LSU across their chest. That kind of matters for something sometimes.
Well, look, I think if it's possible it matters, it does matter in this one. Because Tennessee's the new kids on the block. I mean, look, they're feeding off their head coach. Tony Vitello's trying to piss everybody off, and they're full of piss and vinegar. And it's Tennessee with this edge and trying to play the David to Goliath a little bit. But if there is a team that can rattle a newcomer like that, it's LSU, just because, like you said, it's across the front. Look, Tennessee's the better team. There's no doubt about that. If this thing just goes scratch, Tennessee's going to go to the College World Series. First time since 2005 under Rod Delmonico. But I have a sneaky feeling LSU's got a shot here just because of everything going on. And look, it's year over year over year over year. So we can discount it all we want to, but they get better in May. They get better in June. You let them into a tournament, and you got to beat those son of a guns. I mean, they are not going to lay down when the NCAA tournament gets there every year.
Yeah, and I mean, with Marceau and Labus, and they've actually hit pretty well when they're fully healthy. Like, I mean,
your guy's having a hell of a month.
Yes, and they came into Oxford, particularly that Sunday game. McDaniel wasn't very good, but like that to me epitomized like those dudes were locked in at the plate when they came into Oxford, and they had not been playing great baseball before that. So they hit enough to cause problems, and when you've got Labus and Marceau, you can kind of figure the rest out after.
All the super regionals are not set yet. Old Dominion and Virginia are playing this morning. They got completely washed out yesterday. So the one seed in Columbia, South Carolina, Old Dominion, they are playing 3 seed Virginia in that final. The winner of that is going to face Dallas Baptist, one of my kind of fan favorite teams. I like them a lot. Dan Heepner's done one hell of a job at Dallas Baptist. They completely benefit from SMU not having a baseball program and kind of dominate the Metroplex and some recruiting, kind of the lesser kid there a little bit that doesn't go to TCU or Texas or whomever out of that area. So Dallas Baptist waiting on Old Dominion of Virginia. And we don't know where that game is going to be played, because remember, they have to pick one of the 20 certified sites and really one of the 16 sites that hosted regionals. So it's possible Dallas Baptist gets a home game and they stay in Fort Worth to play the Dallas Baptist, Virginia, or Old Dominion series at TCU's park this weekend.
Right down the street from me. That would be kind of cool. And if Old Dominion does it go back to Columbia? I know it's one of the closest, like, approved sites. I mean, where else would they play? I guess it would have to be there.
It technically could go to any of the 16, but Columbia makes just as much sense for Old Dominion as anywhere else. I mean, they're in Norfolk, Virginia. There's no other option, because I'm told that it has to be one of even the 16 regionals. Like, they can't go to Charlotte's park.
Right.
Just because. So, no, I think it's got to be one of the 16. I think it's one of two things. Do you benefit the higher seed and put it in Columbia because that's closer to Old Dominion? Or do you keep it in the super regional site, I'm using air quotes, and play it at TCU because they were the national seed? I have no idea, but I think it's one of those two.
I mean, there's one that makes sense and there's one that doesn't. I mean, you have to benefit the higher seed, right? But I guess that's not always the NCAA's MO.
I mean, it's the NCAA, dude. Come on. Like, I called hell from a couple people yesterday by pointing out that the NCAA loves them a lightning delay. And I get its protocol, but that game is never paused if that's a regular season game yesterday. Rightly or wrongly, I'm not saying don't even take player safety into account. I'm just saying that if that was not an NCAA tournament game, there's no way in hell they were coming off the field yesterday.
No, a regular season game, it's particularly at Swayze Field, if there's a lightning delay, it's because you saw it happen on the tennis court out there behind right field. Like, it had to be real close to the vicinity, right? I mean, so that was one of the 30-mile radius or whatever it was. Like, y'all didn't see the lightning bolt, did you?
No, it was in, like, Taylor.
Oh, yeah. See, they do. That's people misconstrue things all the time. I knew what you were getting at, but, you know, they do love them a lightning delay.
A few administrators were like, you don't understand, it's the rule. And it's like, I'm not saying it's not the rule. I'm saying it's a dumb rule. That's all. I get it. I'm not criticizing you. I don't think you chose the rule. Just saying it's a dumb rule. That's it. The rest of these super regionals have been set. Arkansas gets through. They had a little bit of a tense time. They were tied 2-2 in Nebraska in an if necessary game last night. Kevin Copps threw, 170-something pitches over the course of the weekend, something like that. They face NC State that just walked through the Louisiana Tech regional. Tech did not play very well against the Wolfpack. So NC State and Arkansas, and you got to like Arkansas's chances there a little bit. It went scratch in Lubbock. Texas Tech advances. Stanford advances as well. They beat UC Irvine in an if necessary game 7. So that's the number 8 and the number 9 national seeds facing each other. Scratch for Ole Miss and Arizona as well. Scratch in Nashville this weekend as number four overall seed Vanderbilt gets Cliff Godwin in East Carolina. They are the 13th seed. Cliff still trying to get the Pirates to Omaha for the first time. He's going to have a tall task in doing that there in Nashville against Rocker and Leiter and company. Vanderbilt kind of bashed their way to a regional final win against Georgia Tech. They're in the finale. We mentioned Tennessee and LSU. Tennessee, the number 3 national seed. LSU was the number 3 seed in Oregon. They lose the opener to Gonzaga, come back, run all the way through the tournament, win 4 straight games to advance to the Super Regionals. Dallas Baptist also a 3 seed, as mentioned, Old Dominion or Virginia. Mississippi State against Notre Dame, that's a 7-10 series. The Bulldogs walk through, other than a close game with Campbell yesterday, a pretty simple regional there in Starkville. And Notre Dame just bashed the hell out of UConn, Michigan, and Central Michigan. I think they gave up 2 runs the entire weekend. So, interesting weekend in Starkville. I still give State the advantage there, but I'm interested in that. I do think Notre Dame's a little better than they're getting credit for on the season. And then Texas, they have something under their pillow for luck, because in a 4-year period, 2 of their super regional opponents are Tennessee Tech and South Florida. Tennessee Tech obviously coming through the Oxford Regional in 2018, and then South Florida, the 4 seed, winning in Gainesville, Florida. They knock off South Alabama, the 3 seed in the final in Gainesville, winning that regional, the only 4 seed to advance to Super Regionals. Florida, the first team eliminated, maybe in the whole damn tournament because of when the game times were. Talk about an uninspired effort by Kevin O'Sullivan's club over the weekend. They played like he's out as the Gators head coach.
That's a great way to put it. And it netted a pretty good storyline, right? It's a cool story at USF. I don't think they've ever made a Super Regional as a program before. And Texas, that's quite the fortuitous draw, to put it mildly. But South Florida was pretty impressive. I mean, they beat a pretty good Miami team, too, in that winner's bracket game, and then handled a South Alabama club that, I don't know, they seemed confident. I'd watched a ton of Jags baseball this year, but just from catching a piece of those games throughout the weekend, they seemed pretty confident. But, yeah, Florida, that was a stunner because, you know, they get handled in the winner's bracket – excuse me, in the opening game against USF, and then – I was on the golf course Saturday, so I wasn't watching the early games, but it was like 4-1 against South Alabama in like the 5th inning or whatever. And it's like, oh, okay. Like, they might be in some trouble here. And then the next time I refreshed my phone, it was 15-1 and they were in a lightning delay. It's like, okay, so they just quit. They decided not to show up. That was surprising because they were playing pretty decent baseball down the stretch.
Yeah, I thought they'd gotten hot. I mean, frankly, I thought Florida might be the team to kind of run through that. I thought they were going to give Texas hell in the Super Regional. Instead, Tommy Mace kind of gets banged around a little bit. I mean, they played awful. And I do think it probably had something to do with O'Sullivan. I mean, the media has been reporting him as a potential LSU guy, reporting some stuff going on off the field with O'Sullivan. Who knows what's going on in Gainesville, which you kind of hear locally. I mean, that had a really weird feel to it there. And we'll see what happens. I mean, look, if LSU is going to go the O'Sullivan route, you got to think they're going to go that route in the next 72 hours. I mean, this thing's going to happen pretty quickly if that's the play in Baton Rouge at this point. And if it's not, it's where you start bringing some other guys, obviously, hint, into the mix a little bit as this thing moves forward. I know everybody keeps asking the question. I have no idea whether Mike Bianco would be interested in the LSU job. None whatsoever. zero. So that's obviously a key to it. And I don't know. I just know LSU has a faction of people that's interested in Mike Bianco. What sticks out? What are the one or two super regionals that are, you find compelling? Because frankly, you can make the argument Ole Miss and Arizona is one of the couple most compelling ones out there.
Certainly is. And while I give Arkansas the advantage, NC State's one of the hottest teams in the country right now. And eventually that's got to count for something. They ran through that regional. And if Arkansas doesn't play better, I mean, can Kopp save them for two games again? I guess. But that was – Nebraska gave them everything they wanted and then some. Everything else, I don't know. I mean, with the Texas, they don't think they'll have too many issues with USF. You know, as much as I'd like for Cliff and ECU to get over the hump, but Vanderbilt in a super, it's just like, okay. That's a tough way to go about it. And then I think LSU, just from a name brand standpoint, the LSU-Tennessee thing will be fascinating because that's going to be a raucous environment in Knoxville. I know that stadium's not the biggest, but you know those fans have really bought into that, it seems like. They've had some really good environments this year. So those are three off the top. I mean, it's kind of SEC heavy, but that's most of the college baseball I watch. I don't watch a ton of West Coast and anything else. So those are probably the three to me, and I've probably left a pretty good one out there that I'm just not thinking of.
Arkansas is through the hard part in a way because Omaha has a lot of time in between games. If you win, they can definitely get through a super regional, and those son of a bitches just win. Yeah. But are they a pitcher short? They're a pitcher short. If you told me something weird happened, it's because Arkansas, look, they've had bad luck. They lose Peyton Paulette. They've had some issues. They just feel like they're at least somewhat gettable if you could avoid Cops going completely superhuman in two different games.
Yeah, I think the fact that he had to do that is probably a little bit of evidence that they are a pitcher short. But again, like you mentioned, Super and Omaha is a different deal because the games are spread out, and tying that back to Ole Miss probably translates a little better for the Rebels as well. But yeah, those guys just find ways to win games. I mean, you get the fortunate break where they have the pass ball and then the kid hits one 500 feet immediately after that and sends the entire stadium into a meltdown. Like they just – you know, Dave Van Horn, you talk about people, you know, the narrative of people trying and not trying and mailing it in at Hoover. Dave Van Horn made it very clear they've never won an SEC tournament, and those dudes went out there and did it with relative ease.
Mm-hmm. So here are the game times for everybody, or at least the days. I mean, people don't need necessarily with the games. But the Friday matchups, NC State and Arkansas, they kick off at Eastern Times. 5 o'clock on Friday for NC State and Arkansas. East Carolina and Vanderbilt are at 11 a.m. on Friday, so they will start the coverage from a super regional standpoint. That's East Carolina and Vanderbilt. Stanford and Texas Tech, 2 o'clock on Friday, and then Ole Miss and Arizona, the nightcap at 8 o'clock on Friday night. Your super regionals that start Saturday, South Florida against Texas, 8 p.m. on Friday night in Austin, late night in Austin. Dallas Baptist or Virginia against Old Dominion. Those are at 11 a.m. on Saturday, so the early game for those. And those will be played in Columbia, South Carolina. They have announced that now. The Old Dominion or Virginia Dallas Baptist regional will be played at South Carolina at Founders Park. LSU and Tennessee will start at 6 o'clock on Saturday, and then Notre Dame and Mississippi State, 1 o'clock on Saturday are those the times. So LSU, Tennessee, Notre Dame, Mississippi State, South Florida, Texas, Dallas Baptist, or Virginia and Old Dominion are your Saturday start times. And from a TV standpoint, that makes all the sense in the world. The most eyeballs from the casual fan, LSU, Tennessee, by far the most sexy name brand that there is there. So 6 o'clock, that makes sense for that one. State and Notre Dame makes sense for being a day game, but not crazy early either. And then the day before, you get the number one team in the country with Arkansas for kind of the nightcap on Friday. And then Ole Miss and Arizona, two Power 5 teams playing. So I completely understand why TV went the way they did with all those different game times. Ole Miss is probably the one at the biggest disadvantage, simply not getting that Saturday start to give everybody one more day. And yeah, they have to travel. I mean, they're going across the country.
Yeah, and the other side of it, I guess if you want to find a silver lining, not to put on my meteorologist hat here, but is it any less hot at 8 o'clock at night in Tucson or whatever it is out there than it would be in the dead middle of the day?
Is this where we make, like, the dry heat joke that 115 out there is still not hot and we do the whole Southern thing?
Yeah, we would need David Brandt now to weigh in on that debate now that he lives out there. But, yeah, I don't know. I was just I don't know how that's going to work, but I wonder if the heat's a factor at all.
I think that's possible. But, I mean, I will say, look, I my time spent in that area is I did a weekend in Vegas and I covered the 2007 Tempe Super Regional when Ole Miss was at Arizona State. It was like 105 to 110 for first pitch both those days in Tempe. And while it was hot, I'm pretty sure I wore pants one of those days. Like, it is incredibly hot. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not going to be that Mississippi guy. But 90 degrees with humidity is much sappier and worse here than 105 out there.
It's the thickness. It's harder to breathe, right? I mean, that. Yeah. Just a little bit of that on the playing golf Saturday in Oxford. It was really humid middle of the day Saturday in Oxford. It was like, good Lord. Like, we're sweating a bunch. And you're exactly right. I mean, the dry heat, I didn't spend a ton of time in that area. It's kind of the same deal. I think 2 days in Phoenix for something one time. It's different. It's still hot, but you're not – it's the heaviness of it and kind of the struggling. It's harder to breathe, particularly, I imagine, if you're doing something active. So, different type of deal. Probably not too much of a factor, particularly with the games in the evening.
Yeah, I mean, the evening has to be better than during the day from that standpoint. I don't know that it necessarily affects anybody at all. Offensively, Ole Miss hits a ton of home runs yesterday. They played pretty well throughout the weekend at times. Just, I guess, kind of final thoughts from that standpoint, offensively, anything kind of stick out?
Just that they'll have to be better going into this weekend. I was trying to add it up just in my head while we were recording live now. So you had 6 runs Friday, 3 runs Saturday, so that's 9, and then 4. 7 and 12, so that's 19.
4-3 Saturday.
Oh, that's right. It was 4-3. It was 3-2 the whole game. So that's what – I guess my point being, I don't think you can count on Tim Elko having 10 of your RBIs again or whatever it was. Like, I guess what I'm getting at is you need the – and Chatagnier looked a lot better this weekend, which I think is a better sign. You need the T.J. McCants and the Hayden Dunhurst to be better because – and while Jacob Gonzalez has continued to hit, those three guys are kind of what made that offense this year have some bite, right? You knew the other guys would hit at the clip they did. It's the McCants and the Gonzalez's that really made it the kind of elite lineup that it was for much of SEC play. I think they're going to have to be a lot more consistent 1-9 offensively to have a chance to go win at Arizona than they were this week.
Oh, look, assuming that the guys you know are going to hit still hit, that's absolutely it. It's McCants and Dunhurst. Those are the two that have to make this thing go. Because as of right now, I mean, frankly, and I know Mike's not going to do it, and it's not even necessarily a criticism, but given that when those guys aren't hitting, Justin Bench needs to be leading off because the dude just gets on base, and when you hit him fifth in front of McCants and Dunhurst, he's just kind of getting stranded. He's just sitting there despite the fact that, I mean, even in the Sunday night game, sure, he got hit 3 times, but he got on base 4 times. I mean, I don't care how you do it, get on base. I mean, it's kind of like the Moneyball movie quote a little bit. Hey, he gets on base. I don't know. Like, just figure it out. So you're kind of straining him a little there when he's hitting fifth. Now, he had the big 2-run homer yesterday that catapulted Ole Miss to the 4-run lead there in the first inning. But Dunhurst to McCants are it. I mean, McCants has got to calm down. He's acting like a freshman right now. And Dunhurst is just swinging a lot of pitches outside the strike zone. He's not being overly selective. I think he's probably pressing just a little bit is the way it looked. I mean, that at bat, I guess Saturday was pretty rough there, or whenever that was. I forget, Saturday and Sunday are getting mixed up for me a little bit.
Fifth or sixth, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was right after the back pick, right?
Yes.
Or right before, one way or the other, whichever way they were at. So those are the two guys. Gonzalez, by the way, just kind of following his hit progression. He had another good weekend. Gonzalez now 4 hits away from cracking the top 10 in school history for a season. He's at 88 right now. I think 92 would get him into the top 10 in school history. So just that little nugget as they move forward. Ole Miss 6-11 all time in super regional games. Obviously, they lose 2-1 in 2005, 2006, 2009, and 2019. They win 2-1 in 2014, and then they went 0-2 in Tempe in 2007, losing a really close one in Game 1 and then kind of getting blown out a little bit in Game 2. I think Mike Leake threw the Game 2 for the Sun Devils back in 2007, if I have that right. But nonetheless, Ole Miss trying to get to the College World Series the first time since 2014. I mean, like you said, it's a difficult matchup. They all are, unless you get really lucky like Texas or something like that from a pairing standpoint. And Arizona went through a very complicated regional. In some ways, though, it made it a little easier that it was complicated because you had the 2-seed and 3-seed trying to beat the hell out of one another a little bit. I mean, Santa Barbara handled Oklahoma State, but it's somewhat what Ole Miss benefited, too, with Florida State and Southern Miss, is you couldn't key on the 1 because of how good the 2 and the 3 was, but Arizona got past Grand Canyon, one of the most difficult 4-seeds in the field, a team that I think had beaten Arizona earlier in the season in a one-off. And then they just kind of controlled games against UC Santa Barbara both times. So Arizona's battle-tested. They've had a really good run through the Pac-12. But it's not Texas. It's not Vanderbilt. It's not one of these behemoths in a three-game set. It is absolutely the reason why, if the seeds mattered at that point, if it did bump Ole Miss up, Hoover did matter, because it's put them in a much more advantageous spot as they move into this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's certainly something that they could go out there and win. Where if you're going, like I mentioned a couple of times, just Knoxville, Nashville, it's kind of probably a little bit of a different deal out there. So, you know, it was interesting. Austin Miller, listener Austin Miller, not the pitcher, was not DMing on Twitter, sent me a statistic. I thought that was interesting before last night. When Ole Miss has had two chances to advance to the next round, whether it's a regional or a super, they were 1-5 before last night in the second chance. So the only other time they did that was Drew's game against Western Kentucky. Last night was the second time they'd done that. I never thought about it from that perspective. So 05 Texas Super, 06 Miami Super. They beat the Western Kentucky in the second chance.
Mean like when they were the 2-0 team or the 1-0 team and then had two shots at it?
You got okay. Two shots at it. They were 1-5 in the second game until last night.
Well, that's kind of remarkable.
Yeah, it really is. It's almost as remarkable as the 1-5 in super stat, right? I mean, that's almost a statistical anomaly. But, you know, it was TCU regional in 12 is probably the one no one thinks about as being the other one in the mix there.
That one in 12, I mean, we can do this all day. Justified. They were so thin that Mike tried to win the regional with three pitchers. They had not really developed many other arms. And, I mean, he got 2-0, and they were kind of in it, sort of. But, I mean, he literally tried to win a regional with Mike Myers, Bobby Wall, and R.J. Hockley. And that was kind of it. It was those three dudes, and here you go, try to get it done as they move forward. You know, look, the bullpen has been a maligned topic we've talked about for a while. They're still not overly deep, but you're starting to find some roles a little bit. I mean, if Myers, you know, maybe he's the starter now, but in general, Myers' emergence. And some people go, hey, why'd you not use him earlier? He's gotten better throughout the year because he's getting more post-Tommy John. Everybody's overlooking that he did not look like this in late February and March. I mean, he's a much better arm right now than he was at that point of the season. Doherty's emergence, what they've been able to kind of do with some other guys. I mean, they have a plan in place to actually be able to get through a couple games and piece this thing together as it moves forward. So we'll see. To me, this – comes down to, you know, can Derek Diamond give you a quality start? I don't even necessarily mean six innings and three runs from a statistical quality start standpoint, but just in general, because I do think Derek's going to throw game one. Can he give you enough to keep you in it? And that is the swing game. Can you just find a way, wake up the next day, hand dug the ball and see what happens? Because like you said, it's not a sure thing, but look, if Arizona beats Doug, you tip your hat and tell him nice, you know, good luck in Omaha, because that is what it is when you've got your best guy out there on the mound. So, you know, the moment's not going to be too big for Ole Miss. They beat Vanderbilt 3 out of 5 this season. They won a weekend against them 2 out of 3. Nobody's a more difficult weekend in the country than Vanderbilt, even Arkansas. So, you know, got a little unlucky with the times, got a little unlucky with the dates, but they fought through a difficult region. They showed me a lot last night. It would have been really easy to not play as well as they did early, to not seize control of that game, or even to not keep going when Southern Miss cut it. But, you know, I'll tell you, I guess Southern Miss got it to 3 multiple times. I don't think they ever got it to 2. But every time Ole Miss kind of responded, I didn't sense any freak out. And there was never a point in the game last night where I truly thought they're going to lose this. I mean, I kind of thought they kept somewhat control of that game all the way through all 9 innings.
The responses and the time of the responses were I thought, pretty important as well. You know, you talk about Elko's grand slam. Of course, that's important. But I thought the solo shot right after Southern Miss answered, to where they got it to like 9-2, 9-3, whatever it was, him immediately putting one out there and getting it back to 10 and kind of, you know, not matching it exactly, but at least kind of continuing to add on was huge. And then, you know, particularly when things get squirrely and it gets to, you know, 10-7, Calvin Harris hitting a home run off Hunter Stanley was absolutely massive. I mean, Harris's batting average was like, what, 0.05 something, yeah. And he hit a home run way over the right field fence, so against Southern Miss's ace. I guess to encapsulate how nuts that game is, I mean, Ole Miss threw their Saturday starter one day's rest, Friday starter two. Southern Miss threw their Saturday starter on one day's rest and Friday starter on two. They threw the kitchen sinks at each other, and Ole Miss, like you mentioned, checked every box and checked every kind of adverse moment and overcame it. And it took everyone from Calvin Harris and Cody Adcock to Tim Elko and Doug Nikhazy. They used everyone last night.
So the biggest struggle I had, I was filling out my ballot for the all-region team, something that does not matter, but I'm just curious. Who would you have picked as MVP?
I mean, it's Elko, but you can make an argument for Nikhazy or Broadway.
I honestly, I didn't even fill it out. I was staring at it and was like, I put a team in, but then on the MVP line, I looked at it and I handed it to Mitch, one of the Ole Miss media relations guys, and I said, if there's a tie, tell me and I'll break it. Like, I don't know. I don't know who I'm putting into the spot right now, because without any of the three, they're not there. And I'm just like, okay, like, I don't know. Like, I can't. But I think everybody, look, he deserved it, and sentimentality, I think pretty much Elko was almost unanimous.
Sure. I mean, if you have 10 RBIs on one leg, that's a pretty solid case. I just thought the underrated aspect of it, I mean, Doug doing what he did is what he did, but Broadway getting three saves in the three wins is pretty impressive. And I don't think – were all of them six outs or all of them over three outs? I can't remember the Friday one.
I did not think he came in early, but let's check it real quick.
Maybe not. I couldn't remember. But regardless, getting saves 14, 15, and 16, they're not there if they don't have all three of them.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, you're amazed. Taylor's ERA is as high as it is. It's 2.51, and it feels like it should be like 0.51 right now. Yeah, they were all over one inning. They were 1.2, 2, and 2.
Okay, so 5, 6, and 6. That makes sense. And probably the best encapsulation of just how dominant he's been is there weren't very many 1, 2, 3 innings yesterday, and he faced 7 batters and sat down 6 of them. I mean, you were pretty much begging for outs at that point, and he made it about as drama-free as you could possibly have asked.
Well, I mean, and the one hit was Reed Trimble just hitting an infield single, and, I mean, hell, you would have taken infield singles from Reed Trimble all day long because that dude was annihilating Ole Miss.
He was. I would have let him go 4 for 4 with 4 infield singles. They probably would have been okay had that been the case. But Broadway was dominant, and, like, he comes in on a day like that, and, like you mentioned, one base runner on an infield single, and the rest of it was just business as usual for him.
Yeah. So – if you are not done with this yet, if you need a little more baseball, Brian and Colin going over it as well. The Rippy Writes podcast up here in this feed, up on the message board as well.
We might need to change that. Have you seen this? The board's not happy with the Rippy Writes thing.
We can retool whenever and however you would like to retool.
Okay. Well, we might put it to a vote. I mean, keep the thing G-rated, but we could put that on the board and just see where it goes. I saw Rippy Raps, Northeast Jackson Elite. There's a lot of variety in there, so we could narrow it down to three. I'm open to changing it. Like I mentioned, that one, I think I posted something on there. Not a ton of deep thought went into it. It's a right hand, and I'm left-handed.
Yeah, that feels like an error. I'm just being honest. As you move through this thing, if nothing else, we need a logo change. So it's a bit problematic.
We'll work on it.
All right. We can do that. Coverage at RebelGrove.com. Also, story today. I wrote it. I put a message board post up the other day, put it out on Twitter. Ole Miss has picked up John Gaddis out of the transfer portal. Texas A&M Corpus Christi ace. He was not completely healthy early in the season, and then he went on a freaking run. He allowed only 4 earned runs his last 52.1 innings of the season. He struck out 13 and 7 scoreless against Sam Houston State in the conference tournament. And he is headed to Ole Miss. He's deferring med school for a year to take one last college baseball go-around for Oxford. He was described to me, kind of coming full circle, as a Christian Trent 2.0 from a stuff standpoint, is what people kind of thought he compared to. So he will be in Oxford. I talked to him on Saturday or Sunday. It's all running together. I'll have that story up at Rebel Grove probably later today. But Ole Miss adding potentially a huge piece for 2022 with John Gaddis. So he chose the Rebels over Texas, was his other big-time offer out of the transfer portal. So John Gaddis headed to Oxford. We'll talk about that. We'll write about it as the day goes on. If you're at Oxford, we're just watching it rain and rain and rain and rain as it still is coming down. So appreciate Brian jumping on early this morning. We'll find something for you tomorrow as well. I think Neil gets back either tomorrow or Wednesday. I'm not 100% sure of his schedule, but he's out of town. But we'll hold it down in the meantime. So appreciate everybody for hanging out, for listening to the podcast, and we'll talk to you again. very soon.